Hello and welcome once again, listeners, to the seventh episode of the Nonprofit Hub Hubcast, a podcast dedicated to making your ears happy, your job easier, and your nonprofit a little more remarkable. I'm your host, Randy Hawthorne, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. We're an educational resource for nonprofits. You can find us at nonprofithub.org, where you'll find many more outlets of education, in addition to the podcast, including classes, webinars, our printed magazine, and online articles published throughout the week. Today on the Hubcast, we have Claire Axelrad. Claire is a practical visionary whose work combines experience and common sense to set organizations up for success. You should know her from her site, clarification.com, a website that should be bookmarked on any nonprofit's web browser. We talk at length about the problems facing board members, the importance of millennials in the workplace, and the fundraising mindset. And now for our conversation with Claire Axelrad. And I changed the locks on my heart's door. You're knocking. You never gave me back my stolen key. You talk a lot about board engagement. Why is it so scary for boards to fundraise?
I think part of the reason is because fundraising gets a bad rap. People really hate just anything that has to do with the word fundraising. And a lot of times I will meet with boards and I will ask them what word comes to their mind when I say fundraising. And I always get a lot of words like yuck, or it's evil, or it's begging, or it's I hate to do it. So, you know, everything that they associate the word with is a negative. And then I'll ask them the same question about the word philanthropy. I'll get completely different words: loving, generous, giving, joy, inspiring, fulfilling.
And how could we change that mindset?
So part of the problem is that we need to reframe fundraising for board members and make it be about love of humankind. That's what the word philanthropy really means. And really spend some time inspiring them and connecting them to their passion. Because what board members, I really think there's two things that are the problem. One is fear, and the other is lack of clarity on their role. And starting with fear, one of the things they're afraid of is being perceived as inappropriate, tacky, because money is still the biggest social taboo in our society. People will talk about sex, politics, religion, anything else before money. You know, they think it's like filthy lucre. You don't talk about it. So we need to reframe for people that it's not about money. It's about the outcomes that money can accomplish. And if we can get them thinking about outcomes, the people that will be helped, or the trees that will be saved, or the puppies that will be rescued, they get a lot more comfortable. The other thing they're afraid of is rejection. Nobody wants to ask and then have somebody say no, because they feel like it's a personal rejection. They feel like they're begging. So the other thing is trying to retire the tin cup, have them understand that they're not asking for themselves. What they're doing is they're really offering an opportunity for somebody else to join with them in a way that they've found meaningful to accomplish something that's important to them. And a lot of times I say to board members, you know, you're very passionate about this organization. And we'll talk a bit about their passion and why they're so passionate. And then I'll say, so why are you being so stingy? Why aren't you sharing this great thing that you've found with other people? If you found a brand new restaurant that you thought was really great, or if you just saw a great new movie, you would share that with people. So why not share this philanthropy with other people? Then the third thing they're afraid of is looking stupid. They're afraid that if they start to talk to somebody and they're asked a question, they won't have the answer to that question. So part of that is on us as staff members to talk with board members and make them feel really prepared that they have the information that they need. But they don't need very much. Because if we can reframe fundraising as storytelling, just tell your own personal story of why you're connected to this organization and why it means so much to you, you don't have to spout a lot of facts and figures. And if you're asked a question that you don't know the answer to, just say, you know, that's a great question. Let me get back to you and find out. And that's a good thing because it gives you a chance to really build a relationship with the person that you are soliciting. And then the final thing people are afraid of is the quid pro quo ask. The point is, they don't have to give to your cause and you don't have to give to their cause. The only reason that either of you will give to each other's cause if it's a value that you share. And I really talk a lot to board members how philanthropy is based, grounded in values. And if you think of the universe as this place just swimming with different values, some people care about education, some people care about the arts, some care about social services, some the environment. What you're trying to do as a fundraiser is uncover the people that care about the values that your organization enacts in the community. And if you're talking to somebody who cares about those values, then you offer them this opportunity to do something meaningful with you. If your friend then comes back with a philanthropy ask that's for a cause that really doesn't, you know, float your boat, you can say that to that person. You can say, you know, I think it's really great that you're involved with this cause. It doesn't happen to be one of my particular priorities, but, you know, thank you for sharing it with me. And, you know, at some point in the future, if there's another organization you're involved with that you think I might be interested in, you know, please feel free to talk to me about that at that time. The other thing is that they're not clear about their role as a fundraiser. Maybe they were brought onto the board and told, don't worry, you won't have to fundraise. And then maybe a new development staff person comes on board and is expecting them to fundraise, and they didn't know that this was going to be part of their job. So they feel like there's been a real bait and switch. So it's really important when you recruit board members to talk to them about their very special role as board members. And I honestly believe that every board member should be involved in fundraising because they are the leaders of the organization. And if the leaders of the organization are not willing to give passionately, then why on earth should anybody else? So the board has a very special role. It's a dual role. On one hand, they are governors. And on the other hand, they have to steward the organization's finances. So as governors, they set the mission, they set the direction, the strategic plan, they decide what programs are going to be pursued, and they decide on the budget. On the financing side, if they don't take some responsibility for ensuring that the resources are there to fulfill the program and the budget that they've agreed upon, then it's like an unfunded mandate. The organization can't fulfill that. So it's important that they really get in touch with their passion, understand deeply why they're involved with the organization, enact their passion, which is giving a gift, and then ask others to join them in their passion. And that's really where I start with board members, is that you just have to make it all about passion. It doesn't matter so much what you say, but how you say it. So should every board member be involved in fundraising? Yes. Should they approach it joyfully and feel like they're sharing something and feel like they're helpful, find meaning in their lives? Yes.
Certainly, I totally agree with you on that, Claire. I'd like to hear from you and just touch on how the executive director takes leadership to engage the board into fundraising.
Well, I believe it begins with the way that the board members are recruited. You have to start from the beginning and explaining to them what the expectations are. And then when they come and join the board, having a very strong orientation where they learn all about the organization. They also learn about development and how the organization is funded, and understand that they're going to be involved. And if they're not quite ready to ask yet, they can be involved in different ways. And I always explain to board members that they wear three different fundraising hats. And at any point in time, they can wear all of them, one of them, or two of them. But they can't wear none of them. And the three hats system is called AAA fundraising. It was a paradigm developed and mentor and colleague, Kay Sprinkle Grace. And the three A's stand for ambassador, advocate, asker. So as an ambassador, you make friends, you build relationships, you speak from your personal passion, you help identify prospects. So I just think that the executive director makes it very clear to the board member, when you're out and about in your daily life, talk to your friends, talk to your coworkers, tell them how you're involved here and why it's so great, and, you know, speak from your personal passion. Also, consider becoming an advocate. And an advocate is somebody who might do this a little bit more formally, might go to a foundation board and talk about the organization, or might go to a community meeting, Chamber of Commerce, Rotary, a church group, and talk about the organization, or might recruit direct service volunteers. And then finally, the frontline fundraiser is the asker. What's really important is for the board members to feel like the executive director and all of the staff are there to support them. And part of the problem is that many organizations leave the board members out there on their own hanging. And we've already said they're afraid of fundraising. They're afraid they're going to look stupid. They're afraid they're going to get rejected. They're very uncomfortable doing it. And if they don't have a strong staff partner to cheerlead and coach them and make them feel comfortable with it, it's just something that they're going to put away, put aside, put to the back burner.
I'm really interested, and I know you talk about outstanding donor service. How do we treat donors well? How do we service our donors so that they feel like they're being taken care of?
First thing is, the organization has to have an organization-wide, what's being called a culture of philanthropy. It's also sometimes called a gratitude culture or a customer service culture. But there's an understanding that everyone is involved in treating donors very well. It's not just the development staff. And that if a donor donates, it benefits the entire organization, not just the fundraising staff. So the fundraiser can be doing everything perfectly, but if the receptionist handles a donor poorly, then all their hard work is erased. So you do have to have this culture of everybody's involved. Nobody says, it's not my job. Then thank you is the most important thing to create a sense of trust. And trust is the heart of all good relationships, whether they're relationships between a donor and a charity or relationships between two people. You have to be able to trust one another. And the first place that nonprofits fall down often is in the thank you for the donation. And if you don't really thank somebody promptly and personally, meaningfully, in other words, giving them some sense of the impact of their gift, what their money was spent for and how it accomplished something, then they're not going to stick with you. And a lot of times what happens is people get a very perfunctory receipt and then nothing until they're asked again for another gift. So you need to sort of trigger the trust with a meaningful show of gratitude. And that shows that you kind of deliver. If you take 3 months to get your thank you out, or if it's just really cold, people think, gee, I wonder if that's how they conduct the rest of their business. So that's where it starts. And then you have to continue that gratitude throughout the course of the year so that they start to feel really connected to you. So this relationship building process, which a lot of organizations call stewardship, but I just like to think of it as what you would do if you met anybody for the first time and decided, I like this person, I want to build a friendship with them, or I want to have another date with this person. I mean, when most first gifts are impulse purchases. They're like first dates. And if you do have a good first date with somebody, what's the first thing that you do? You start thinking, I wonder what I can do to get the next date. So you start thinking about, you know, am I going to call them? Am I going to invite them to dinner? Am I going to tickets to a show? You need to do that with your donors. And you need to find multiple opportunities to connect to them. And you can do this in your newsletter. You can do it in a blog. You can do it on social media. It's just that whenever you speak, you want to say, thanks to you, Jimmy was able to go to sleep with his tummy rumbling. It's all about the donors and making them feel continually really are grateful for them and you really appreciate their support.
You're totally right, and I too like to preach that the content is right under our noses, that our stories are experiences we've had and our donors can relate to.
Well, content marketing, it's become a buzzword, but if you really stop to think about it, content is really your essence. I mean, if you think about it as an existential question, content is what's inside of you screaming to get out. And I so often hear people saying, if people only knew what we do, they'd support us. And then what do? They don't try very hard to figure out what their messaging should be. They don't figure out what they should say. Instead, they focus on the medium, not the message. Should we do a newsletter or a blog? Should we communicate online or offline? So they focus on the how and the where, not the what and the why. And it's really the message, not the medium, when it comes to building sustainable long-term relationships. And again, like if you're starting a dating relationship, it doesn't really matter if you're conversing on the phone or in a cafe or over email. What matters is what you say, who you reveal yourself to be. And another way I think of it is like giving a gift. And I always say, if you want gifts, you must give them. And the gift is what's inside the box. I'm not going to say that the packaging doesn't matter. It does. But the gift comes first, unless you're a kid. Kids love boxes, but most adults look for the value inside. So you have to think about what gifts we have to give to people. And before you think about that, you have to think about what are people looking for, and also what do you want to happen after someone sees or reads or hears your content? What do you want them to feel, to think, to do? You know, do you want them to be afraid? Do you want them to feel really sad? Do you want them to feel righteous indignation? Do you want them to feel compassion? Do you want them to start sensing that there's a possibility that they could make a difference with their investment? I like to borrow a phrase from Jay Baer, who wrote the book Utility, Y-O-U, and he says, think in terms of utility, how useful your content is. Are you helping people or are you selling? And he says, sell something, you create a customer today. Help someone, you create a customer for life. And a lot of the content that nonprofits put out there is selling. It's very egocentric. They'll put in their blog or their newsletter, hey, we're excited to announce that we launched a new website today. We got a new board member. We rebranded. That's pretty much a big, big yawn for your readers. They don't really care. It's kind of like the blowhard date who does nothing but chat about themselves, who lectures, who name drops. Nobody wants that kind of person in their life. So if you're helping somebody, you're really saying, I care about you. I want to build a relationship with you. I want to build trust. I want to deliver happiness to you. Most organizations have a ton of content that's just hidden, waiting to be shared. I used to work at a comprehensive social services agency, and one day I was at our parenting program, and I was waiting for a meeting, and I saw these file drawers, and one of them said, you know, new moms, new babies group, and I opened the file drawer, and I saw that there were these tip sheets for, you know, how to get your baby to sleep at night, you know, what to begin feeding your baby, all sorts of really interesting how-to-do stuff. And I thought, you know, this is the kind of content that other people would be interested in too. And so we started putting out a lot of that kind of content. And, you know, it would be also like 10 tips to keep seniors safe at home and 10 ways to baby-proof your house. All organizations have this kind of content. And so you want to think about, what do we have that's useful? Maybe we have recommended reading from our staff. Maybe we have recipes that we can share. So again, it's again this, if you want gifts, you've got to give them. You offer them up in the spirit of building a relationship. And you think, huh, I wonder what they would like. And you ask them. You can do a little survey. You can talk to your receptionist and say, what are our most frequently asked questions? But the focus is always on finding this need and filling it and hyping your donors, not your organization. So you think a lot about, how do we want our supporters to feel in relationship to us? I guess, you know, when I'm thinking about content, I'm really thinking about mission and vision and values and putting that out there in a way that is very donor-centered.
Thank you so much, Claire, for your insights today.
You're most welcome. I'm very happy to share this, and I appreciate being able to have the chance to talk about some of the challenges I think nonprofits face that are not as difficult to approach as many people make them. A lot of it is just really stopping and thinking, why are we doing this? And know about us, and what do we want people to feel, and what do we want them to do? We'll help them, they'll help us. We can't really exist without donors, and we have the understanding that we can offer donors something that gives them meaning in their lives, so the relationship becomes really a symbiotic one.
I want to say thanks once again to Claire Axelrad for taking time to chat with us. To learn more from Claire, visit clarification.com. Our Here Nebraska featured artist this week is AZP and their song, All Alone. You can check out more of AZP at goazp.band. For more local artists, head on over to our friends at herenebraska.org for featured artists, exclusive interviews, tour information, and more about your new favorite bands. As you know, we provide all of our content for free, from podcasts, webinars, online articles, and more. We strive to deliver the best information for nonprofits. If you or anyone you know would like to help with our mission, visit nonprofithub.org/sponsorships. Remember, visit nonprofithub.org to learn, grow, and help your nonprofit be more remarkable. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at NPHub. Until next time, go out there and do more good.